You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Talking Reds baseball today with our Reds reporter, Mark Sheldon, on this Monday, September 19th. Mark, thanks as always for the time. And Mark, the Reds have been as a roller coaster as you can be lately. A five-game winning streak was immediately followed by losing four straight. The Reds getting back in the win column Sunday, defeating the Pirates 7-4 to salvage the finale of that series. And as of this chat, Mark, despite the recent struggles, the Reds are still, rather surprisingly, two games over 500 in the second half at 31-29. And even though in the big scheme of things, it's largely inconsequential, how important is it for this team to finish above 500 in the second half to have something to kind of hang their hat on going into the 2017 season?
Well, I think there's a couple of things at play. I think, number one, they would really like to catch the Brewers and finish in fourth place, if that means anything and not much in the grand scheme of things. But I think getting out of last place would just be something they like to say, and that they weren't a last place team. I think specifically for manager Brian Price, having an above 500 record might help his cause. He's at the end of a three-year contract. There's been no endorsement. There's been no tipping of the hand of what his fate is going to be like, whether he's going to get a chance to come back next season. But you can certainly say finishing above 500 after the All-Star break doesn't hurt his chances. So I think that's, for them, it's for him specifically, that's something he wants to do. He wants to finish above 500, and it's all about chasing the wins. I think we talked last week, they don't really care a whole lot about playing spoiler here in these last stretch of 13 games, but I think they really do want to chase as many wins as they can and go out on a good note. There's a few guys having some nice second halves, and I think that's been the ultimate focus.
Yeah, speaking of nice second halves, and that's the ultimate understatement when it comes to Joey Votto. I mean, the second half he's putting together right now, Mark, is just off the charts. And I feel a little bit sorry for him, if only because I don't think he's getting the attention for what he's doing post-All-Star break as a player should. And I think that the team's struggles, by and large, have a lot to do with that. But I had a little bit of fun on Baseball Reference, and right now, his OPS in the second half is 1.147. That's the highest second-half OPS since somebody put up a 1.152 last year, and that somebody, Mark, as you probably already know, none other than Mr. Joey Votto. He's done it 2 years in a row, which is mind-boggling. And again, do you find it a little sad, I guess, that his second half is not getting the attention of, say, Jake Arrieta's second half last year when he was the talk of baseball because, again, of how much the Reds have struggled in 2016?
I don't feel sorry for him in the sense because he's a grown man and he can accept these things. But I do think it's a shame in some ways that he's having these two great second halves and it's gone largely unnoticed. It's amazing. Last year, as bad as the Reds were, he still finished third in the MVP race as a result of that. And going into this year, I haven't heard anything about him being in the top three of the MVP race. I mean, I have a ballot myself and I have to think about that very strongly about who I'm going to put on that ballot. And it's funny because Votto is having a great year. He's been not just in the second half. He's really done this since June 1st. He was hitting .213 and has now raised his average up to .319, which is really remarkable. He's almost 100 points, and he's right where he generally finishes at the end of a season. So it's going to be interesting to see if anyone ever notices. And I think next season, if he's able to put together a year like this for an entire year, then he might get a little bit more notice. But Joey's just a quiet guy. He does not spend a lot of time seeking attention. He does not do a whole lot of extra media stuff. He's not a me guy. He does his thing. He goes home. And it's in some ways refreshing because, in this day and age, it seems like the guys that do all the the social media and the look at me stuff get the most attention. And he's a guy that doesn't really do any of that and doesn't get much attention, but he does deserve some recognition. He's had a great year, and maybe down the road he will get his due.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And like I said, when I was looking up those numbers, for the second half, and I came across, I kind of thought to myself, well, who's the last guy that had a second half like this? And I see 2015, Votto, Joey, and I just blew my mind that he's done this 2 years in a row. He's been basically baseball's best player statistically in the second half for two straight years. And Mark, you mentioned, the whole MVP, it's a debate every single year. It's never going to go away. What does MVP really mean? It's, the literal interpretation is a guy who is the most valuable to his team's success, and I understand that. At the same time, you know, you've got a guy like Joey Votto who his numbers are superior to anybody else's, but he's not contributing to a team's success per se because the team has not been successful. So in my mind, I kind of look at it as, well, there should be an MVP and an MOP, I guess, the MOP, most outstanding player. Is that kind of how you look at it, where, you know, these are two very distinct things, or do you lump everything into one category as the MVP and vote on it as it's been voted on? It's a debate every year. It's a great debate, but you got to get a little sick about hearing about it too.
Well, this would be my first time ever voting. Now that we're new members of the BBWA, I get an NL MVP vote, so this is things I'm going to be weighing for the first time in a serious level. I've always kind of thought about it on a more abstract level. The one thing I look at with Votto, and I do believe it should all be in one lump group, I believe. I don't think you can differentiate teams from, you know, losing records and players from losing teams, et cetera. I definitely think if you have the best year and your team is, 98 losses, but you've had an incredible year, you deserve the same consideration for the most part. But when I look at Votto's case, the one thing that does take away from his potential MVP consideration is if you look at his total body of work, he has had a horrible year defensively. He's got one of the worst defensive wars in baseball for his position. He's definitely got the worst defensive war on the Reds this season, which is, you know, shocking for a former Gold Glove winner. He's someone that took a lot of pride in his defense for several years, and it seems like it's really just deteriorated this season. He hasn't run the bases very well this season. He's gotten thrown out a lot on the bases. So there's some other things that are detracting from him potentially winning an MVP award or even getting a lot of, you know, lower ballot votes. But we'll see. He's, you know, his first is offensive. There's no disputing that he's had a great season, especially a great last three quarters of the season. Is it enough for him to overtake guys like Chris Bryan or Nolan Arenado or Daniel Murphy? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And you brought up a great point about the defensive deterioration for a guy that, as you said, a former Gold Glover. It's really shocking to see, and we've seen, I think, a lot more emphasis placed on defense the past, 5, even 10 years when voting on awards such as this, and that's certainly going to hurt his cause. But again, offensively, nobody could touch him in the second half. The OPS, as I said again, as of this chat, 1.147. It'll be very interesting to see where he winds up in that MVP race, that MVP discussion in the offseason for sure. And Mark, another sad part about Votto is if he were able to face the Reds pitching staff, the numbers might be even better because, as we all know, the Reds pitching staff is just 2 homers away from tying the all-time single-season Major League record currently held by the abysmal 1996 Tigers at 241. The Reds have given up 239, and I'm trying to desperately find some sort of a silver lining as there's really no question at this point that the Reds are going to set this record. I guess, has the pace tapered off a little bit in the second half because the bullpen has been better? I know they do have the bullpen record for homers given up, but is there anything here that we can look at and say, well, yes, they're going to set the record. It's not good, but it could have been worse.
I don't think there's any silver lining for the Reds. The one silver lining, I think, is maybe a former 1996 Detroit Tiger and current broadcaster C.J. Nikowski can have a little glass of wine and toast himself and say, you know what, the record's no longer on my shoulders, my teammate's shoulders. It now belongs to Cincinnati. And I'm sure I remember I tweeted with him a little bit about this, and so I'm sure it'll be a nice thing for to get that off their ledger. But as far as the Reds, they have definitely shown a pitching improvement. I mean, you can't discard the whole body of work. You got to look at the first half, and it was abysmal. The home runs were an astounding rate. They were at one point trending to hit over 300, allow over 300 home runs. And they've certainly, that's tapered back a little bit. They're not going to completely obliterate the record. They are going to break it pretty handily, but they're not going to, clobber it. And I think it's been better in the second half. Guys like DeSclafani have been better. The bullpen's been better. On the other hand, Brandon Finnegan has been susceptible to home run ball. He leads the league in home runs allowed. I believe Dan Straley is second in home runs allowed. I think it's different situations. I think Finnegan's made a lot of mistakes that have allowed home runs. I think Straley's a situation where he's not afraid to throw in the strike zone and give up a home run, especially if it's a solo shot, if it's for the greater good. And he's done pretty well, limiting himself to not getting with things like walks, and that's where Finnegan gets in trouble. So I think if there's some things to be, pleased about with the pitching, they learned, they grew. Going into next season, perhaps this won't happen again.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And speaking of CJ, had the pleasure of working with him for a couple years here in our neck of the woods in New York at MLB.com. A great guy, and I'm sure that, like you said, he's gonna raise a glass when that record does fall. It will no longer be on his shoulders. That's something I'm sure that he is looking forward to. Mark, to wrap up, you brought up Dan Straley, and lo and behold, he is no longer hitless as a big leaguer. Congrats to him. He snapped the 0-for-48 drought on Sunday with the clean ground ball single into right field. And you've had some ongoing discussions with Mr. Straley throughout the year. And I know that, he would kind of joke about it at times. It did kind of bother him too. But I would think that this is a huge sigh of relief for him that he can now proudly say he is 1-for-49.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's been times I've seen him with a bat in his hand, and me or another writer will say, "Hey, going to work on your craft," and he joke that, he has as many major league hits as the writers do, things like that. And it was certainly something that, it was kind of funny. But then at the same time, he'd see a pitcher like Tim Adelman, who was a rookie and would get a hit. He got like two hits in his, I think, couple starts ago. He got another hit in another start before that. So he's watching guys that with less service time get hits. Homer Bailey came off the disabled list and got a hit in his first game of this season. So it's been kind of an ongoing gag. Hey, when's it going to happen for Straley? And I know he's wanted it for a while, and I'm sure he was pretty thrilled. I wasn't at the game yesterday, but I did see the video, and the players and the teammates were certainly aware of his offer. And so I know pitchers they don't get paid to hit, but they're proud like anyone else, and they want to get the credit and get the hits, and they take the batting practice and all that stuff. So finally, he's got one hit. Maybe he'll get two before the season's over.
Hey, crazier things have happened, right? And I love that he kind of poked fun at himself even after the hit. I believe he sent a tweet that said, 0.021 never looked so good. And boy, is that true. To go from triple zeros to the 0-2-1, it was a good day for Dan Straley. He gets the win, gets his first big league hits, and all good things for Straley and the Reds on Sunday. Mark, that's a good place to wrap this one up. We'll do it again at this time next week. That's our Reds reporter, Mark Sheldon, joining us here on this Monday. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.